From Yellowstone National Park, this is What We Do. I'm Brett Rayburn.
And I'm Ashton Hooker.
All right, Ashton, first of all, it's great to see you. How's it going?
Good to see you too, Brett. I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm awesome. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
Have you ever hitchhiked before?
You know what? I don't think I have, honestly.
The way your face went, I thought you were about to tell me an epic hitchhiking story.
No, I'm actually surprised I haven't done that, though.
Well, I did some research in the superintendent's compendium, and hitchhiking is legal within Yellowstone National Park as long as you follow some certain rules. So one of those rules, which is in Section 5, Part 4.31, which I'm sure you read all the time. Mm-hmm. says that you can hitchhike as long as a sign isn't bigger than certain dimensions.
Do
you know what the max dimensions for your hitchhiking sign would be?
Wow, this is a very niche question. I honestly have no idea, but I'm just going to take a random guess. I'm going to say it can't be bigger than like 5 by 5. Feet.
So 5 feet. That's a really big sign.
I was trying
that's like a little bigger
than I thought.
That's huge. It's actually 2 feet by 2 feet. So okay, you're going to have to trim.
That's a more usual size of sign.
Yeah. So next time you're recruiting someone to pick you up for hitchhiking, it just needs to be under that 2 feet by 2 feet.
Okay.
You should
interesting.
Be good.
Interesting.
If you want to hold a 5 foot sign, the sign spinners, that might be your, that might be your go-to. So our next guest probably knows is a lot more likely than we are to know Section 5, Part 4.3 of the superintendent's compendium, by heart, because she's the law enforcement specialist here at Yellowstone National Park. So, Katie Anderson, have you ever cited someone for hitchhiking with a sign? Like if Ashton gave them their 5 foot by 5 foot sign, have you ever cited someone for that?
No, but I would have definitely stopped and talked to her if she had a 5 by 5 sign. I would want her life story.
That catch your attention.
Yeah, I feel like you don't even need to know the compendium to know that, like, that's probably someone you want to talk to.
Exactly.
Well, there's always a first time for everything. So I'm guessing, and I'm guessing you see a lot of things, something different every day as a law enforcement specialist. But I want to backtrack a little bit first before we get to your current position and talk about where and when you got your start in the National Park Service.
Yeah. So thanks so much for having me. My where and when. So my career with the National Park Service began in 2001 as a GS3 park guide at Assateague Island National Seashore in Maryland, living with those wild ponies, which is pretty much a childhood dream being fulfilled right out of the gate.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So was it the wild ponies that got you to that job, or how did you hear about the Park Service?
Well, so the Park Service goes way back for me. I'll have to go many decades back from that. It pretty much goes back to about the late 1950s when my grandparents jumped on the Ranger 3, which is a vessel that takes visitors from the mainland of Michigan and takes them out to an archipelago of islands in Lake Superior called Isle Royale. And the island, as it's sort of lovingly called by all of us who sort of grew up there or grew up going there, along with my family, were super instrumental in my formative years in instilling a strong conservation ethic and just in turn inherently me knowing that my life work was going to end up being working on preserving wild and public lands like Isle Royale.
So did you grow up near Isle Royale then, or just vacation there?
Yeah, I grew up in northern Minnesota. And so that was, we always kind of came from that Grand Portage side out to the island. But the island has always been a huge part of my life.
That's a big bucket list park for me. I've never been there.
It's incredible.
Have you been there, Ashton?
No, actually, I just visited northern Minnesota last fall, but we were there just after the boat, like the ferries went out to Isle Royale. So we have to make another trip next time. Yeah. Definitely bucket list.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you kind of started out with that background of the conservation ethics kind of being instilled in you from a young age. And then you got that job at Assateague. How did you, as soon as you got that job, were you like, this is what I want to do. This is where I belong.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I knew it like growing up, there was no question that this is what I was going to do. The National Park Service, it was just really refining what part of the Park Service I was going to be part of.
And so how did you get from playing with wild ponies to where you are now? What are the steps and iterations of jobs and units that you've worked at?
Yeah, so that is, there are such interesting journeys for us in the National Park Service, for a lot of us. What's neat about the National Park Service is that you can really experience the entire country on a deep level by working in the national parks, really from coast to coast. And that's pretty much what I did for those first 15 years with the Park Service. Right after I finished my season at Assateague, I made my way into the heart of DC to work for the Wilderness Society. And I was interning for them and really just getting amazing exposure to the Hill and really understanding how important the work of the nonprofit world was, but also how it coincided with the federal government agencies and, you know, decisions being made on the Capitol. And so spent a good chunk of time there, really kind of digging into how do I get on permanently with the National Park Service. After I finished up my DC work, I ended up going up to Acadia National Park in Maine and spent a fall up there counting raptors. That was another big part of my life growing up in northern Minnesota. We had big flight migration routes. And so was an intern up there, a volunteer up there as well, just really kind of starting to build my resume and figure out how I could get my foot in the door full time. As I learned about the different types of rangering, sort of the longer I got in, I made my way to the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, another archipelago of islands in northern Wisconsin.
I used to live in Bayfield.
Yes, in Bayfield, exactly. So you know the apostles well. And I dipped my toes in interpretation and lived out on Stockton Island. And it was an amazing experience. And from there, I put myself through a seasonal academy, which was kind of the norm in how to get permanent in the law enforcement ranks. And so put myself through that academy because I really wanted to be running more of like the adrenaline junkie calls that were kind of coming with rangering. And I really wanted to get in on some of the craziness. And so then I spent the next 5 years of my career seasonally at Rocky Mountain National Park as a seasonal law enforcement ranger, doing the front country side of things and then also the backcountry work. I was able to jump in on the search and rescue operations, really got my first experience working fatalities and working the family liaison roles. And then also starting and really integrating the other side of my life that had always been so strong for me. And that was having a horse component in my career. And started my mounted patrols at Rocky Mountain National Park.
Oh, cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've done like a lot of things.
I have. And that was the seasonal days. And I'll make it brief on the permanents, but the permanents were really neat because that Rocky experience, in my off season, I had been doing ski patrol work full time and had some avalanche background. And so Yellowstone picked me up permanently to be working on Sylvan Pass and be doing avalanche control up there as well. So I sort of could bring a skill set of the rangering skills as well as sort of my other life loves into one job. And then ran down to Grand Canyon for 5 years and got some crazy experience down there. And that experience on the South Rim, being a South Rim Ranger for about 5 years, really built the core of who I am as a person and ranger and supervisor at this point in time. And then returned to Yellowstone to the justice operation and the law enforcement office as the court liaison, and which I can say is now definitely one of the best jobs I've ever had. And into the role that I have now full time as a law enforcement specialist for Yellowstone National Park.
That's awesome. And I guess we should mention to folks that you're joining us remotely from Glacier National Park. So you're on a detail currently at Glacier as well, right?
I am. Yeah. Within the National Park Service and just federal agencies in general, we're able to do either temporary promotions or details kind of where a park unit will borrow you for a period of time and let you get some really good experience. So right now I'm the acting chief ranger in Glacier and filling in a gap, a period from when the old ranger, old chief ranger retired and when they get their new chief ranger in.
Yeah, that's an awesome opportunity to have some of those.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have a typical day in your position at Yellowstone? I'm guessing not, but what is a normal, if you had to, you know, I'm doing air quotes for people listening, what's a normal day for you look like?
Completely not normal. So, you know, it's really interesting. The Yellowstone Law Enforcement Office is super unique in the National Park Service. We've got a full-time federal magistrate, so a judge right there. We've got a United States attorney right in the building. We've got a United States marshal who works on all of our arrests with us and our warrants. And Yellowstone cases are all prosecuted in-house, and our sole purpose in my operation is in support of the field staff, so the field rangers who are doing all the patrols and the response to emergency stuff, and really providing, our office provides subject matter expertise. We assist with, you know, search warrants and blood draw warrants on DUIs and filling out criminal complaints and really just supporting our partnerships in and out of the house.
Yeah, that's a lot of different things going on. And I'm guessing it's that like variety that you're seeking. I mean, you talked about being an adrenaline junkie. Obviously, you know, you don't seem like you're the type of person that just sits down often.
Yeah.
You're always out doing stuff is the vibe I'm getting from you.
Yeah, the operation is a dream for me because it's super dynamic. There's a ton going on. It's slightly out of control. There's a lot of stuff happening. And there's always just like kind of big balls or big issues floating up in the air that need to be tackled. And I like that. That's definitely the energy that I like dealing with stuff at.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's something, you know, not every person is going to thrive in that type of environment. Like, what are some things that you do that helps you, juggle all those things that you say is up in the air? Like, what qualities do you need to have to enjoy a job like that?
You know, I think there has to be sort of a natural comfort level with multitasking things. And I'm not sure if that's an ADD portion of my universe or something else, but being able to ride the waves of chaos a little bit and be okay with that and take a left-hand turn when you were supposed to take a right-hand turn that day, like that is absolutely critical. I think it's also super cliche, but communication, like literally being able to communicate with everyone from defendants who are sitting in your jail, prisoners, to the chief magistrate judge and beyond is it's completely mission critical in our operation. I'm sure 90%+ of my day and my job as a law enforcement specialist is just building trust and bridges with the field and all of our partners through just so much. Mm-hmm. Like you cannot over communicate in this job.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot. I mean, and like communication can make the difference between like de-escalating somebody and escalating somebody. I mean, that can make a huge difference in what your day ends up being like.
Absolutely.
So is that your favorite part of the job? That variety that, you know, you just never know what's going to happen doing a lot of different things, or is there something else?
That is a huge part of what makes me love my job. I think if I was really going to be pinned down on having to say what my favorite part of my job is sort of in the last decade of my career here, I would say whether we like it or not, the National Park Service is like a giant family and it needs tending to very similarly. My favorite part of the job, I think, is probably having really meaningful connections with my team and my peers and those many levels above me. And being at a point in my career right now that I'm given some creative liberty to create the type of work environment that fosters those connections. I think it's so interesting because I think that adrenaline junkie is like your younger years, you know, and the older you get, it's just life is short. And the relationships that you have at work, which is where we spend most of our time, and at home are just so critically important. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's been that's come up a few times in our conversations with people, especially those that have like lived in the interior of the park or like remote mm-hmm. areas. It's like that mm-hmm. community is so important because that's who you have.
Yes.
And so you do a lot with those people. You work with them and, you know, you have them over to dinner and all those things. And I think that's part of what is so special about the National Park Service experience that you just don't get in other jobs.
Yeah, it's not a lot of work environments where you work with your coworkers and then you also go live in the same neighborhood yeah. as them. Yeah. You know, like they're literally your neighbors.
Yeah.
So that's a big difference.
I know when Jake takes his recycling. I can see what he's been eating for lunch if I wanted to.
Perfect. That is a perfect example of how this works.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on the flip side of that, what's the toughest part of the job?
You know, similarly, I think I went the first two thirds of my career here, I have gone full blown energy. Like I've done things at 1,000% and really kind of gone full send on everything. But it takes a toll. Like this career is not for the faint of heart. We mm-hmm. see a lot of the underbelly and the darker sides of society and to have to deal and we have to deal with the aftermath of all of that. It is us. We are exclusive jurisdiction here. We don't have other agencies coming in to sort of take the case from us. It lays in our hands. Yellowstone sees up, 2 to 3 million people in a really condensed portion of the year in the summer there annually. And all of those visitors and those of us living in the park bring our issues and problems and addictions with them and with us. And so it's really critical at this stage in my career, and we've seen the aftermath of not sort of dealing with some of that stuff and talking about it, that we actively process the cumulative work stress and the trauma. And thankfully, Yellowstone National Park is at the forefront of supporting their team with the Yellowstone Resiliency Project. And the National Park Service is building out some exceptional peer support, mind, body, wellness type programs to support us proactively for a fulfilling career, but more importantly for our well-being the day we retire and beyond. And so we're still coming out whole. And that has been a huge culture shift that has accelerated, I would say, in the last 3 years. And so the toughest part of my job is the loss that we see through trauma and, undealt with issues. But also just the light in that is that I've got the opportunity right now with my own career to hyper-focus on those things and be part of shifting a culture nationwide, really.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. I mean, especially, we all take our jobs home with us somewhat, but in your position especially, I'd imagine that's like one of those things that's really hard to not take home. And that could really eat away at you if you don't take care of yourself when you're home with your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Yellowstone Resiliency Project. I'm not sure, a lot of people might not know what that is. Do you mind just telling people a little bit about what that entails?
Yeah, so the project came about in cooperation with the Yellowstone. I believe with Yellowstone Forever was where that partnership really came about after the Yellowstone flood and after the loss of some coworkers to suicide. And there were just some forward thinkers and support from the superintendent's office and the chiefs to move forward in that partnership to fund mental health resources in Yellowstone. I mean, one of the most amazing parts about living in Yellowstone is its remoteness and its disconnect from the rest of the chaos of the world that's happening around us. But the downside to that is we have a hard time with resources and getting them. And so the Yellowstone Resiliency Project has funded bringing in healthcare providers for counseling and touch bases and just connections. So So we're not kind of going through these big life events and sort of suffering on our own. And there's, you know, bigger conversations that are sort of happening on like where next, what next for these programs. But absolutely critical for every division in the park to have this resource to be tapping into and just normalizing the conversations around it. I mean, this is the human experience that we have right now, and nobody is alone in their suffering. We all go through it. And just the pressures of life, you know, create environments that we need to take care of ourselves and one another. I mean, that's just the reality in the Park Service is we have to take care of one another. So this Yellowstone Resiliency Project is brilliant. The folks that are working on it have just done an incredible job implementing it. And we are so lucky to have that team working for us.
Yeah, definitely forward thinking. That was the key point I think you brought up there. It's like one of those things that plays dividends. It's you're playing the long game when you're investing in people's mental well-being. And so that's awesome. I guess cycling back to kind of your career, it sounds like you've had a lot of moments that you could probably choose as a defining moment. Do you have one defining moment that you would say, you know, kind of defined your MPS career or set you on a trajectory or that you can look back on?
You know, I think about it often, because I get asked that a lot, like, what's the best park you've lived in? What's the best position you've ever had? And I can honestly say that I am so, like, at the core of my being, I am so incredibly proud of every single job that I've had with the National Park Service over the past 23 years. I'm so proud of myself as a GS3 at Assateague Island, like, you know, that I ever even, like, stepped into it and got that job. I would say it all builds on itself. It builds character. It builds who you are to the core of your being in each of these positions that you're in. And I would say just sort of sitting here in this window now, like watching the snow dump, you know, on Glacier Park, the acting chief ranger in Glacier National Park right now is one of those highlights. And I feel so honored to have the support from my Yellowstone team, which is like my core team, to take on this role. And to have this connection now with yet another incredible gem of a park and the amazing people that call this place home.
Yeah, you have all these connections to places where people, like, they're on people's bucket list. Like, they're happy to just make it to one of those in a lifetime. And you've got all these special memories that so many, and we all do. I mean, that's kind of why we all do what we do, I guess, in a way.
So lucky. So,
that's awesome. Yeah. Since it was such a good answer, I'll let you get away with, I technically said you had to have one defining moment, but I'll let you get away with it because it was a really good answer.
But if you know me, there's never one. I always juggle at least three things. So
I'm the same way. Yeah. So, and this is a pretty, you know, probably a more straight connection than some of the other people that we've interviewed. But how does your job contribute to the Park Service mission? So, you know, the Park Service mission, is kind of drives everything that we do, and it's at the forefront of our minds every day. But so how does your job, contribute to that?
I would say, it takes a massive village of committed public servants to come anywhere near fulfilling the mission of the National Park Service. I am just a cog in the wheel. But at the core, I truly believe that my work is super meaningful and impactful. And I feel that every single day, whether it's helping the field rangers with a complex victim case as we run the victim witness program in my office, or supporting the, you know, the prosecution on a significant poaching case. I love my job. And, you know, I've heard people say that, like, you shouldn't love your job because it'll never love you back. And I just am unconvinced of that. And I think you need to find deep joy in the work that you're doing and believe truly that it's making an impact. It's for the greater good. And I never question that, no matter how hard my days are. I know that, like, I'm giving back way bigger than I'm getting. And I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and someone has to keep Ashton with her 5-foot by 5-foot hitchhiking sign.
You gotta keep me in check.
On the right side of the law.
Unreasonable, Ashton.
Hey, I went big.
Yeah, can't blame these people in check over here. So for those of people who are listening to this and are just like, wow, that sounds like an awesome job, like me, like I'm like, wow, that sounds like, so what series do I look at in USA Jobs to do what you're doing?
Yeah. So the series that post on USA Jobs, which is where all of our, federal jobs are posted, is 0025. So right now that's the Ranger series. And you know, at some point there may be a shift in that, but right now 0025 Park Ranger Law Enforcement is what folks would be looking at in USA Jobs.
And is that the same series for like all the positions kind of working their way up the ladder?
Yeah, it is. So everything from your field level law enforcement, GS5, all the way up into your chief ranger positions.
Awesome. That makes it easy. I feel like a lot of times it jumps around and gets complicated and it's hard to keep track of all those numbers. So 0025 is the one to remember. And do you need formal training to get that like GS5 position?
You do. There's a couple routes now. Kind of the old way is where we would put ourselves through a seasonal academy, a law enforcement academy that's sort of connected with the National Park Service. And then you would apply to seasonal positions, like summer positions. This last year, a new system, a direct hire initiative was sort of started, and we're hiring things a little bit differently. So in that case, a couple times a year, there's announcements that are flown nationwide for the National Park Service law enforcement positions. Either way, you'll spend a significant amount of time at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Glencoe, Georgia. And then in a field training park as you build the foundation to your law enforcement career.
How long are you in that field training park for?
The field training park is, I got to think about how many weeks it is. It's 13. I think it's 13 weeks. I'm kind of talking off the cuff here, but, and sometimes that's your home park. Yellowstone we're really lucky. We're one of those parks to have a field training park and staff in place that can field train folks in person.
Awesome.
And what's the kind of stuff that people are exposed to in that training? Like what could, if somebody's interested in going through that, like what would they expect to be exposed to?
Yeah. You know, I think this kind of ties into to another portion of some of the questions. At the core of these jobs, we are federal law enforcement officers. Like that is the core of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, FLETC, the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, they do foundational, like basic law enforcement training. So everything from some people's first day on the firearms range with your pistol and your shotgun and your rifle to patrol tactics, like how do I literally drive my police car? How do I do high speed pursuits, kind of chases? How do I care for victims in cases? Mm-hmm. How do I physically maintain my fitness and show that I can ground fight with somebody that I'm going to need to go hands-on with in my career? How do I handcuff somebody? What are my arrest procedures? So it really takes you through all of the basics of how to be a cop.
Yeah. So it's like a good crash course then.
Yeah. Right, you right. make it or yeah. you don't. It's a crash course. You have to have the mental space and be really there to want to do it because it's not all fun and games at all.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. For sure. I bet you build some really strong connections with the people that you go through that with, kind of like, you know, boot camp or something.
Absolutely.
Well, before we let you go, Katie, do you have, we like to ask this of everybody because it's just fun for us. And I come up with more things that I want to do in my summer vacations, but do you have a favorite story or memory? It doesn't have to be from Yellowstone, any national park service unit that you visited or worked at. Do you have a favorite story?
It's going to come from Yellowstone. I don't know if it's a specific story. I think what I would say is this kind of speaks to the specialness of living in these places. Living in Yellowstone is like being a National Geographic episode every day. And I would say it's amplified when you live in the interior, which I've lived in several times, and I don't now. But what I would say is you can almost gauge the rhythms of the year, like the seasons of the year, by the flow of the wildlife and the thoroughfares and the tracks that they are walking. And, you know, just this season right now, as I'm not in Yellowstone, I'm in Glacier and I don't have the bison out my window. I'm starting to wonder if, you know, if the cow bison right now with their big swollen bellies, if they're starting to make their way towards Mammoth Hot Springs and down to their calving grounds. And that always is like my sure sign that spring is coming. And I just think that's just one of the most incredible parts about living in Yellowstone is that you can just, it feels very prehistoric to be living there with them and just watching these old rhythms just float by. Like we are truly just there in somebody else's world. And we're just guests. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty special.
Yeah. I love being in a place where it's like you said, those connections to like the natural world, like the bluebirds are like, I heard a bluebird, you know, spring is coming and everyone's just as excited as you are.
Yeah.
Where some places people will be like, what? So what? So that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us and taking the time. I know I speak for all of us, but we thank you all for your service and thank you for keeping us safe. I know I live like literally all of my neighbors are law enforcement rangers. So I just feel like the safest person whenever I'm out and about my home. So thank you all for what you and your team do day in and day out.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of What We Do. Thanks again to our guest, Katie Anderson. If you like What We Do, rate and review the show wherever you listen. Every positive review really helps new listeners find the show, so thanks for doing that. If you have a question or want to learn more about a particular job, contact us using the form at go.nps.gov/whatwedopodcast. Thanks for listening.